Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Power Up and Game Podcast. My name is Michael Mosley, and I will be your host today. And joining me will be no other than the boss himself, Taylor. Taylor, how are you doing today?
Am I the boss in reality, though? I feel like Jeremy Harris is kind of the boss.
I mean, when it comes to this podcast, Riley and I see you as the boss. So, like, I guess your boss is boss, but yeah, over this podcast, I'd say you're the boss.
So, you're saying I'm the assistant to the regional manager?
I would say more of you're the first round of bosses until the boss transforms again, a la Dark Souls style.
I guess that's the way to put it. I'm doing pretty good, man. There's some stories we have on our docket today that I'm pretty excited to talk about. Some things that are more so, I feel like we're going to be just like, this is pretty cool, but nothing we can really dissect. And then our main topic, I think we're going to have some fun with it. Because you and I had a discussion about Silent Hills before, and man, it was a legendary one. I thought it was one of our best.
Yeah, we have a lot of rumors and stuff that we can go through, but you went out and picked a few good ones for us this week. And yeah, Silent Hills, as long as we're not doing the whole blue box or whatever they're called.
Yeah, well, like, actually, it's in our write-up for it. What was it called? It was Abandoned, right?
Yeah, Abandoned, yeah.
I remember, maybe I'm misremembering it, but I remember it like I was trying to play the devil's advocate for it, and I was like, but what if it is? And the whole time you're being the logical person. It's like, it's not, though. It doesn't make any sense. And then I'm trying to bring up the Reddit threads and everything, and you're just like, even if it is, it doesn't make any sense. This is ridiculous. But I found it to be one of our funniest conversations. And I'm very glad we're going to get a part two of it. Kind of, sort of, maybe.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting one. And I think everybody enjoyed that. Before Blue Box finally fell off. Haven't heard about them in a while and their shenanigans.
Yeah, wondering what happened to that game, to be honest with you, because it looked interesting.
I mean, did it?
I mean, from what we saw, it looked interesting. Some of the stuff that apparently the game was going to do, but it seemed like that whole hoopla happened with, is it a secret Kojima game? And then after that, it just fell off.
Yeah. That's what really ruined it, because like after that you're like, oh, it's PT part two, and yeah, you know, PT was a good concept.
You would think that would do the opposite, right? With all the press and news that, oh crap, we can use this to our advantage and put a lot of stuff out there. I'm not sure what happened to the game. It's still in development, all that stuff. It's just, it's weird how it did just go completely out of the limelight.
Yeah, I think it's a money laundering scheme.
You been watching Ozark?
Oh man, I still have to finish it. But yeah, I still have to finish the last season. But yeah, it's definitely a money laundering scheme.
Michael's looking. I'm just saying. He's looking everywhere for money laundering schemes.
I don't know. With the game industry getting into NFTs and stuff,
that's what Ozark's. I know Ozark just ended. It's gonna come back, and it's gonna be Marty selling NFTs.
Oh my goodness. Oh, gross. It would be kind of fun, but gross. Like a mini, like they did with Breaking Bad. Like bring it back for like movie a special with,
Jesse.
El Camino, yeah.
Yeah. Man, I love that movie. Yeah. So good. We're off on a tangent right now. I need to watch Better Call Saul. I've heard nothing but great things about Better Call Saul.
Oh, it's on its last season too, isn't it? Or is it just, did it just end?
I think it's still in its final season, so I should catch up and try to watch the finale live. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do that, though. But getting back to Power Up and Game.
Oh, yeah, we just turned ourselves into Nurse Talk Movies over here.
You know, the Nurse Talk Movies guy comes on this show. It's going to bleed into it a little bit.
Yeah, it's inevitable. Actually, Riley and I were talking about that last week, how sometimes it'd be cool to mix and match shows.
Like, you guys talked about the Doctor Strange thing, and I was like, fuck, that was a good idea. We should have brought y'all. I had no idea you guys saw it, so I was like, man, that would have been great. Would have been a crossover thing, where it's like, oh, the multiverse of our podcast.
Podverse of Madness. Oh, yeah.
We're here to create a podverse.
We're just going to find a bunch of other indie podcasters and just start doing all kinds of crazy crossovers.
Just find variants of us.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Oh, speaking of awesome, on our docket today, we have Warzone 2 details that may have been leaked, and we'll talk about those reports and rumors. Also, Techland is developing an open-world fantasy action RPG. Say that five times fast. We'll go over what is known about that project. Fall Guys is going free-to-play, and on top of that, the game has come to Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, PlayStation 5, and the Epic Game Store. Oh, and it's releasing for those systems on June 21st, which is pretty soon. We'll go over our thoughts on all that info and probably talk about our experience with the game. We didn't talk about it last week, but we will briefly share our thoughts on Starfield's delay. And in our main topic, we'll ask a seemingly simple question. What's going on with Silent Hill? And we'll talk about all the leaks, rumors, and spoilers around the franchise as of right now. So to kick things off with our stories of the week, Warzone 2 may have had some of its details leaked, but the upcoming game will receive a new loadout system. It's clear fans haven't been as thrilled about the Vanguard era of Call of Duty, and man, that is putting it mildly. And instead, it appears everyone is looking ahead to the next two games in the franchise, Modern Warfare 2, the sequel to 2019's Modern Warfare Reboot, and Warzone 2, the standalone sequel to Call of Duty Warzone, which it was also developed by the Modern Warfare team, wasn't it?
It was. So this kind of feels weirdly like for like a sequel. Call of Duty game. As look, I'm the Call of Duty guy on this panel, right? So I'm the guy who always says good things about it. It kind of feels like it's the most natural Call of Duty's been. And here's where it's like, oh, this feels like a natural sequel that should happen. This feels like a natural sequel to Warzone that should happen. Because, yeah. You know, we have Warzone right now coming. You have to have, you don't have to have Modern Warfare. But it's using Modern Warfare as, like, its interface, its hub.
That was the thing. Like, yeah, it was using the Modern Warfare's new engine and all the stuff they were learning about Modern Warfare.
So while Warzone 2, we're going to get into the story here in a second. While Warzone 2 is going to still be on most likely Modern Warfare 2's engine and have all those kind of things, it is really cool that it sounds like it's going to be its own standalone thing that we can all just download by itself.
Yeah, because, you know, like you said, we're getting that second, but yeah, the way that Activision was trying to like blend all of it together in the menu became a cluster.
It's just messy. It makes it so much easier if you're going to. Like, we have Modern Warfare 2, awesome, cool. We also have this standalone Warzone that whenever the next game comes in, then you could add stuff to that Warzone. You know what I mean? Instead of it all bleeding into multiple games and it's a big mess. So, that's really cool. But back to, I guess, the rumor story we have here.
Because I hated booting up Modern Warfare and then, like, see Vanguard and all the other crap they try to, like, buy now. It's like, I don't want this crap. If I wanted, I would have bought it already.
Like, I get it. I get what you're doing. I'm not necessarily even mad at it. It just looks so clunky that it's
it does.
Unpleasant.
It makes it look so, it makes it look ugly. But according to a YouTuber by the name of Nero Cinema, Warzone 2 is said to be more like Blackout than original Warzone. Oh, God. Nero Cinema says that loadouts will remain in the game, but they will be locked in various strongholds around the map. You would have to enter a stronghold, complete some kind of objective, and retrieve their loadout. There will also be enemy AI in the strongholds. And Eurocinema goes on to talk about ground loot, a slightly revamped armor system that sounds like Blackout, and a new bag system that will add some inventory management to the game. Moving on to the Warzone 2 new maps, it's said that High Rise from their OG Modern Warfare 2 will be an area of the map. Oh, wow, that actually sounds kind of cool. After the video was posted, Gaming Insider Tom Henderson verified Nero Cinema's report and added a few other notes of what he's heard via a report from Exputer. And I hope I said that right.
I think it's Exputer.
Yeah, like computer, Exputer. Okay, for the sake of keeping this write-up short and to the point, we're going to rattle off some details in bullet point form. OG Modern Warfare 2 maps and Warzone 2 are said to include High Rise, Quarry, Terminal, High Rise. And Afghan. High Rise, what did I say?
You said High Rise. It's like, what is
I think I said it twice.
Yeah, like, you said it twice. You knew the mistake, and then you continued to do it.
I tried to correct myself with the same mistake. But I'm looking forward to Terminal. Terminal was always my favorite map.
Yeah, I love Terminal.
Yeah, I think that's like everybody. I think that's like the fan favorite. That and Afghan.
Really? I think High-Rise was a beloved map. I know Quarry wasn't. Me and my friends hated Quarry.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cared about that map. But there are about 25 to 30 strongholds throughout the map with different types of strongholds. And this will apparently... I'm sorry, this is apparently not a new rumor, but we thought it was interesting. Henderson talking about a third game mode in Modern Warfare 2 called DMZ. That would be an extraction-based mode. Players will fight against other players and AI as they try to complete objectives, loot up, and extract. Henderson believes the DMZ mode would take place on the Warzone 2 map. And Henderson also notes that the Warzone 2 map was created with the normal Battle Royale mode and the DMZ mode in mind. And we're left with some other information about, some information out. So if you're interested in learning more about that, we always leave links to every news story we cover. Just check out the description of this episode. VGC says the original video partially matches what they've heard. So Taylor, what's your take on all this? I mean, we already put our two cents in this, but for the rest of our bullet points, what are your thoughts?
I'm actually pretty excited by all this. I was already very excited to play Modern Warfare 2. Like when everything we're hearing like this year about Starfield, we'll talk about that later. That getting delayed, Redfall getting delayed, which I didn't think that was coming out anyway, but besides the point, God of War, people are concerned about that. We have all these games getting delayed to 2023 or later. The one game, shockingly, that I'm looking forward to that I know is not getting delayed is Modern Warfare 2, because they never delay their Call of Duty games.
Yeah, no, they need a big hit right now. With everything that's going on with Overwatch 2 and them having pretty much nothing else out, yeah, they need this.
As for Warzone, I'm really looking forward to what we're seeing here from both Henderson and... what is the YouTuber's name again?
Nero Cinema.
Tom Henderson is also pretty reliable as well. So the fact that both he, Nero Cinema, has... had that video, then Henderson kind of corroborated it, and then VGC partially verified some of it as well. So it's a good sign that's like, still take it with a grain of salt. That being said, I think this is possibility of actually happening. When it comes to the stuff in this report, though, I'm very excited by that. Like, I didn't hate Blackout. I know that's a divisive thing, and it doesn't sound like it's going full Blackout. It sounds like it's just taking some things from that game mode and putting it into Warzone. I like the idea of strongholds. I really like the idea of using Modern Warfare 2 maps from the OG trilogy and putting it into the Warzone map. What do you think?
Blackout I was okay with. I mean, it was kind of to me. I actually kind of enjoyed Warzone's Battle Royale mode in the beginning. And I mean, if they're really going to change it up that much for Warzone 2, at least it'll feel like a sequel. Like, at least it'll feel like they learned something and they're adding to the formula rather than just re-releasing Warzone with... Modern Warfare 2 assets or whatever. Like, it sounds like they're putting actual efforts to pretty much go back to ground zero and make Warzone fun before they started stacking all the other Call of Duties into
Black Ops. Black Ops Cold War, it didn't kill off Warzone, and Warzone's not dead now. I'm not trying to say that.
No. But it was definitely the beginning of changing what was...
Yeah, it took a change in direction to where it's like, I'm not feeling it as much. And then Vanguard came along, and it really solidified those feelings from the players who felt like the game mode was going downhill. So, I think you need this game to be a banger.
Yeah, it's good to have the original devs back and having them do the sequel rather than Activision handing off to one of their... subsidiaries, like when their support teams to do it. But you were saying with Black Ops, I mean, not Black Ops, but Cold War, I feel like that's when Warzone started taking a hit quality wise because they tried to put in everything that was Cold War, and it really took it from a modern shooter and started making it seem like the old what was Cold War set in? The '70s?
The '80s.
The '80s? Okay. And it kind of made it feel that way, and it changed the meta way too much to where it kind of felt like they wanted that to be Warzone 2.0, but it didn't really stick. And Vanguard, I stopped playing before then, and I've heard how...
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Caldera, the new map. It really turned me off to wanting to play it. I don't really care for the design, and even the King Kong Godzilla thing. Like, yeah. I didn't hate it as much as other people did.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was like a mix of both what Riley and I were talking about and what you were predicting, which was weird. Like, we kind of predicted it exactly. Like, Riley and I were joking around, like, maybe you can kind of get a kill streak or something and have the kaijus just attack people on the map. You do that in that event. But then you were saying, like, oh, they're just going to stand there. And that's also what it was. So it's like, how the fuck are we both right? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was really strange. It's one of those things where somebody had a good idea, but execution-wise, it just wasn't there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Warzone 2, I think it helps everything we're hearing about it and how much it's going to be potentially changing the way the game's going to flow. And with a new map, with Modern Warfare 2 coming out, it's like a soft reset button, I think. Where Call of Duty is in a... I think they're on the right track with having Warzone and having these games get integrated into Warzone. I think that's a good idea. I really do. But I feel like it got a little messy along the way. So having Warzone 2 come along and act as this soft reset button and everything that we're reading so far that might be in the game, I'm actually pretty optimistic about it, which is kind of shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to Warzone 2. Although DMZ mode, that sounds... What was that mode 2042 tried to do?
Hazard?
Satellite came down.
Hazard mode, I think.
Yeah, hazard mode. There you go. It sounds a bit like that, only I'm glad they kind of put it in the AI, because it kind of sounds like it's going to be like partially like horde mode mixed in with extraction. And I kind of want to see what that's going to be like. But I know that's going to be a mode I'm not going to play a whole lot. I'll play like maybe once or twice. And unless it's really good, I'm probably not going to play it more than twice. But how do you feel about DMZ? Like, is that a mode you'd be interested in?
I think it's going to depend on if that mode is real. What does it look like exactly, you know? Like, what is this mode going to really be? Because in this report, I believe it says that it's the Warzone map and the DMZ map are the same. Or that's what Henderson believes, I think. So, I think what matters then is how do you make Warzone be a great fun mode, and you also make DMZ, or whatever they call it, sound fun and different than Warzone.
Yeah, these distraction kind of modes never really work out that well. I don't know why games keep trying to do them, but yeah, you're getting a bunch of randos to do an extraction and work together. Nah, it doesn't work in Call of Duty.
It's tricky, so I trust... Yeah. Infinity Ward, because I really enjoyed Modern Warfare 2019. It's weird how that game has gotten a lot more flack over the past few years when I thought it was easily the game that saved Call of Duty.
I thought that was the one that everybody was like, oh yeah, this is the one. This is just like when Modern Warfare released, it feels like the new era, the next era of Call of Duty.
I think it's some post like, well, this wasn't as great as it could have been. I don't like the fact there's doors, that kind of stuff, creeping in, and it's just like, I get it. I think things could always be improved, but in terms of stuff we've gotten in the past, especially with Call of Duty multiplayer and what we get later with Black Ops Cold War and Vanguard, I feel like Modern Warfare 2019 is still the pinnacle of all that stuff. So I'm really excited for what we're hearing so far about Warzone 2 and for Modern Warfare 2. Same thing. I'm very excited to see what this game and its standalone VR are going to be. Because right now, I think what Call of Duty, I think, needs is that injection of new life. Because right now, we've talked about it plenty of times already, talking about this story, is it feels clunky. The new maps haven't meshed as well. Some of the events have fallen flat. It's just, it needs that reset button. So that's what I'm hoping this is going to be.
Yeah, same here. And speaking of injection new life, Techland is injecting new life into their development by making an open world fantasy action RPG. Techland CEO, I'm sorry, I know you tried Taylor, but I cannot say that last name. So I'm just gonna call him Mr. Paywell.
Techland CEO, Paywell Markuka.
I think that might be the way to say it, and I'm gonna say that you're correct because I'm gonna be honest, like I
I'm
don't
not
think I can pronounce that.
100% sure about that pronunciation. I tried looking all over the internet. I couldn't find it. But I believe it's Paywell Markuka. I apologize if it's not the correct pronunciation.
All right. But yeah, the Techland CEO recently talked about their plans for Dying Light 2, which I think they said they have a 5-year development plan for that game alone. So that game's gonna get a lot of support. And he also talked about what the developer's next project will entail. He said, "We're very happy with what we have accomplished with Dying Light franchise so far. Moreover, our journey with Dying Light 2 Stay Human has only just begun as we plan to support the game for at least 5 years." Yep, there it goes. With a scope and size matching, if not exceeding, what we have provided our community with during post-launch support for its predecessor. Mr. Paywall also said, "At the same time, our ambition is to introduce a brand new IP that is vastly different from what we have been doing for the past several years. We want to create a fully next-gen experience, a new fantasy epic set in a sprawling open world, fueled by the skills and experience we have gained as a team over the years, infused with new ideas, passion, and creativity." Now, this game is probably a long, long ways away, but do you have any thoughts on the story?
First off, Techland, I think they did a good job with Dying Light 2. I feel like it stuck its landing. It's just not as good as people, maybe as the developer pushed it to be, if that makes sense. I don't think people think it lived up to the hype. I think it's still a good game. So it's cool that they're going to continue support for the game and have a bunch of DLC coming out, which is great. It's great to support games like that. As for this is a story that we don't have much information on. Techland, I think they're gonna have to nail this game, whatever it is, though. Because I think coming off of Dying Light 1, which everybody thought was the surprising hit, then you had Dying Light 2, which right now, as it stands, I think people are a little down on Techland after Dying Light 2. Not necessarily in like, oh, this game sucks, just like, we expected a little more. So whatever this game is going to be, this fantasy action RPG, open world fantasy action RPG, which it's going to be years away. Well, the only reason we're talking about it is because it got announced here. So I'm excited though, regardless.
It's definitely I would say it'll be a good 5 6 years before we like see a trailer for it, like a teaser trailer, because I think they're really going all in with Dying Light 2 right now. And if anything, this game is probably just like in the concept phase, like not even like a tech demo kind of deal, but just like figuring out what the style is going to be, figuring out characters, not even writing yet, just like concept art in general. So I think we're a good ways away from whatever this next gen experience they're going to try and pull out. But yeah, like you said, there's not a whole lot to say here. But do you think Techland can actually pull off a open world fantasy RPG? Because it's more than just having 20 plus zombies on screen at once. Like now you have to have all kind of particle effects and fantastical beast that flies around and crawl everywhere.
My biggest problem with Techland over both Dying Light games has been its story. I don't think they've been able to tell a compelling story yet. So I think that's, especially for something that's being described, and yes, it's vague, it's just telling a genre, as a fantasy action RPG, it's like, it's going to require some interesting characters, some interesting lore, some interesting story stuff, which Dying Light 2, I think, has some interesting stuff in it, but they don't do anything cool with it, if that makes sense. They don't do anything, like, entirely compelling that makes you go, like, man, this story is so cool, I want to play it and replay it and do this decision, and it doesn't make you want to go back and play, I think. Its gameplay loop does that. So I think they can nail that part of it. The problem to me is going to be, can they get a story down?
Yeah, that makes sense, because they're not the best storytellers in the industry. And, you know, when you do a fantasy RPG or fantasy anything, you have to show imagination. like you gotta have an imagination to do fantasy. And so far, what we see from Techland was very generic. We haven't seen a whole lot of interesting stuff from them. It's very generic. I haven't played Dying Light 2 yet, but I've heard how disappointing the story is, especially the ending. And one of the things that one of my biggest complaints with Dying Light 1 was the story. Like, the character isn't interesting, the lore isn't interesting, the city itself isn't even very interesting. And that's really weird, because you're doing parkour, you think the city would have a little more life to it, but no, it just seems kind of lifeless. And I don't mean just because it's full of zombies, but because, like, I don't know, there's nothing interesting about the world itself. And when you do a fantasy RPG, you know, you gotta do a complete 180 on that. Like, you have to have strong lore, and like you said, characters, your world has to be interesting and lively. I don't know. Do you think they'll probably do something more like a Dark Souls style? Like, not like gameplay wise, but like the look of it, like kind of have like this dead world kind of look and feel to it?
I don't know if they would, just because Dying Light 2 is already this dark and depressing world. And you can really get into a rut creatively, I think, by just going, we're going to just keep doing dark and depressing shit. But I'm going to come back to what I said before. I trust Techland gameplay-wise. I trust them graphically and work it all out. What I'm concerned by is, can they craft a very good narrative and a very good world out of this? Like you said, most likely they are in their very early stages of development on this thing. We are years away from probably hearing about it. Understand all that. But hearing this story, that's the first thing I thought of, was like, the gameplay is probably going to be really cool. I hope they come up with something equally as cool for its story.
It's going to be an open world parkour RPG.
I'm just going to carry that around to every franchise they do.
You'll use magic to create swinging poles and whatnot for yourself. All right, let's see. Oh, hey, here's an interesting one. Fall Guys is going free to play. Mediatonic has announced that when Fall Guys releases on Xbox Series XS, Xbox One, PlayStation 5, and Epic Game Store, the game will be going free to play. The game will be released for those systems on June 21st. So, Taylor, you played Fall Guys, right?
Hey, I played Fall Guys. I've gotten a few crowns.
Yeah, so what do you make of this call from Mediatonic?
I think it's the right call. I really do. Because you could always make money other ways, a la Rocket League, a la Fortnite, all these other kind of games. So, all in all, I'm very excited to play Fall Guys when it comes to Xbox on June 21st.
So, I played Fall Guys because it was free with PlayStation Plus a few months ago. And I was like, oh, people keep talking about this game. Maybe I'll try it out. I downloaded it, never played it. I went to visit a friend in Kansas. And I took my PS5 with me. And she and I ended up just playing that game on our separate screens, and it was actually kind of a blast, but only because she was around. Because again, you're playing with randos. This is definitely something you play with other friends. I'm gonna be honest, Fall Guys feels like a game that should have been free to play from the beginning, especially with the way they they kind of want you to like do season passes and stuff. Like it's just, I always thought this game was free to play from the beginning, but only because I keep forgetting that I got the game via PlayStation Plus. So, and I could have sworn this game was already on Epic Game Store, but I think I just keep seeing pre-orders on there. And yes, people, I do open my Epic Game Store every now and again, and I keep seeing that game, so I keep thinking it's in the free to play category. But yeah, I think it should have been free to play. But hey, you know, the best time is now. So
what's really cool about Fall Guys too is it's a game that I don't think people are gonna get tired of.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. It's too reminiscent to me of like a Mario Party, to where people just, you might grow tired of it for a few weeks, a few months or whatever, but I feel like people will always come back. It's just, to me, free to play is the perfect way to go with this. Like you said, I thought it was free to play anyways, but it's because I also forgot. I was like, ah, shit, that's right, it was on PS Plus.
Yeah.
It's because when the game went to PS Plus, everybody went, oh, if you have a PlayStation, go download it right now. And everybody did.
Yeah.
So essentially it was a free-to-play game already. It's just now going to be a free-to-play game for every system.
Yeah, man. I don't know how people who purchased the game originally feels about this, but I guess they should be happy because like, now there'll be more people to fill out lobbies.
It's an easy story for us, right? It's something that is very notable. It's worth us mentioning on the show. But there's no hot takes here. You know? It's not like we're going to sit here and go like, oh my god, they're going to be missing out on so much money by going free to play. This is just the easiest, like, oh yeah, no shit. This is the right call.
This is just one of those things where you're just like, yeah, it should be because it's a fun game. And while they're still pushing the Battle Pass, I'm okay with it going free to play. Mostly because, again, I got it on PlayStation Plus. But it just feels like a party game like that feels right for free to play because it's something easy for everybody to get into. It's not like.
And that's what I'm saying. I don't think people are going to grow tired of it forever. That's what I mean. Is because I feel like there'll be friends groups who will play it when it initially comes out, like, oh my God, this game's so fun. Then something else will come along and take away their attention. Then all of a sudden, about 5-6 months pass, you know. I might re-download Fall Guys, and all of a sudden you start playing that again. It feels like that perfect kind of game, like a Rocket League. That happens with me with Rocket League all the time. I'll play it, I get tired of it, I uninstall it. 6 months later, man, why do we quit playing Rocket League and just start that cycle all over again?
Yeah, I think people also do that with most free-to-play games because you'll see stuff like Apex. It'll go down in viewers and streamers or whatever. And then suddenly it's like, oh, it's a new season. It goes back up. Even Fall Guys does that when they get ready for a new season. And some of their just crossover outfits. I think that's what people really love, those outfits. And it's just a fun party game. It's a fun game that you can drink, bring some buddies over, and everybody, almost like a LAN, only you're still going to play it online. And just have everybody compete against one another and like 20, 30, 40 other randos. And I think that's the most fun to have with Fall Guys is just grab a few friends and everybody play online. It'll be like just like with Call of Duty when you used to get buddies together and like group up. It'd be kind of fun to do that again, only in Fall Guys.
Yeah.
See, I never thought of that, and I gotta try now. Oh man! But speaking of trying, Microsoft is still trying to prove that Xbox has games.
Damn, that was just coming off the top rope.
Oh man. Oh, before anybody gets butt hurt, I am the Xbox guy, okay? I love Xbox, you guys.
Dude, we're talking. I don't wanna hear anybody ever say that this podcast hates Xbox.
Oh,
how much
no.
We praise Game Pass almost every other week. I don't wanna hear that.
Yeah, so like I enjoy Xbox. You guys heard me whine on this podcast and even our old version of the podcast how much I've been searching for a Series X and how much I hate that I couldn't find one and how much I celebrated when I did get one. So don't take this as me being biased towards Xbox, okay? Just sometimes as a fan, you got to admit that Phil Spencer and company, they done did mess up, okay? But Starfield and Redfall, two of the biggest exclusive announcement that we've heard about, what, last year when we got a good look at Redfall? Well, not a good look, but we got that cinematic trailer for Redfall at the Video Game Awards. And we were like super excited to be able to hunt vampires with our friends. That was going to be awesome. But unfortunately, Starfield and Redfall has been delayed. Which, let's face it. I think Riley called out that Redfall would be delayed. Because I think I put that on my anticipated games for 2022. And I think Riley was the one who said that Redfall will most likely be delayed. So she was right.
Yeah. I'd agree with her 100% because this was a game that we're in May, right? We're about to be in June, and we haven't seen gameplay. And when the game was announced, I don't remember if it was the Game Awards or E3, one of the two.
No, it was the Game Awards.
It was the Game Awards? Okay.
Yeah.
So when the game was announced and it had the cinematic trailer, I was like, 2022, and I'm sitting here in May, and I'm like, yeah, sure? yeah, sure? Yeah, all you had was the cinematic trailer, no gameplay. Okay, still 2022. Okay, so yeah, this makes a lot of sense for Redfall to get delayed.
This hurts because it was one of my anticipated games. I was looking forward to this game so much, and the sad part is when we made that list earlier this year, we all said that these games that we're about to list off, there's a good chance they're all going to get delayed at least by a year. We've just gotten that used to games being delayed that we're not even sure if a game is coming out. In fact, I think we picked games that's coming out in 2023 as part of our list of 2022 because we knew they were going to get pushed back anyway. But we didn't talk about this last week because it happened the day after we recorded. But yeah, Redfall and Starfield, almost called it Redfield. Starfield and Redfall have both been delayed until 2023. And if you wonder if Bethesda gave us an essay, they did not, but they did have a nice little black and white bar for us. Nothing bright yellow, nothing to blind you when you open up Twitter. But Bethesda had this in their statement. We've made the decision to delay the launches of Redfall and Starfield to the first half of 2023. The teams at Arkane Austin who are doing Redfall and Bethesda Game Studios, who's doing Starfield, have incredible ambitions for their games, and we want to ensure that you receive the best, most polished version of them. We want to thank everyone for their excitement for Redfall and Starfield. The energy is a huge part of what inspires all of us every day and drive our own excitement for what we are creating. We can't wait to share our first deep dive into the gameplay for both Redfall and Starfield. Oh man. For both Redfall and Starfield soon. Thank you for your support. So again, this is an older story. So I know you all probably have your opinions on this. So let's go ahead and stop wasting time. Taylor, you and I both know where this is going, but what are your thoughts on these delays?
Delays are never terrible, in my opinion. I know there was talk about... Well, first off, let's talk about Redfall. I feel like this is the easier one. We already kind of talked about it already. We kind of both figured this game was not coming out in 2022. So that sucks, but I really like the concept. Just get the game right. Let's get a great game out of that because it sounds very cool. When it comes to Starfield, I was a little hesitant about all this because we've been getting some developer diaries and some nuggets of information here and there. I think we've talked about it in this podcast, haven't we?
Some bit.
Yeah. So we talked about some of it, but we never got that deep dive gameplay. We never got really gameplay, period. So that also gave me some concern. And then I don't remember if it was Jason Schreier of Bloomberg or who it was, but somebody was talking about there was some internal stuff at Bethesda who were concerned about another Cyberpunk situation happening here with Starfield. So hearing that and then them deciding to delay it, ooh man, that's a sigh of relief. because you don't want a lot of these video game companies, for some reason, they refuse to admit when a game fails. And they go, our game won't fail like that game, even though we're making the same mistakes as that game. We're just going to ignore that game that failed ever existed and keep doing our own thing. We're going to keep our blinders on. When you could just take a look at the game that failed and go, oh shit, we're doing something similar. Let's take a minute. Let's take a beat. Let's relax. Let's get this done. Let's get it fixed. And I'm really glad that that's what Bethesda's doing here with Starfield. Because the last thing you want for Xbox, for Bethesda, because this is the first new IP for Bethesda in a long, long time. This isn't some, oh, we're just throwing this little game out there. This is going to be, for them, their next Fallout, their next Skyrim. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for Xbox, because this is their first big game post that Bethesda purchase.
Yeah, there's with the game that isn't before. Coming. I'm sorry, the one that isn't coming to PlayStation exclusively for a year.
Exactly. So when this game launches, you have to avoid Cyberpunk 2077's launch. You have to avoid something. You have to avoid that disastrous launch. Because like you just said too, Michael, when you jumped off the top rope and hit Xbox with a diving swanton over there... Xbox doesn't have a lot of games. They have a bunch of studios. They're developing the games, but they're still in development. They haven't come out yet. So Starfield's going to be one of the first big ones. It's got to hit.
Yeah, I think what makes this so bad is that before the delay happened, we were hearing about how... What was it? Oh man, we were talking about it not too long ago. Zero Dark? Oh my goodness. I can't remember the name now.
Perfect Dark.
Thank you. Let's name out Perfect Dark Zero. We were hearing about how the Perfect Dark reboot was in development hell because there was just all kind of leadership problems and technical problems that was going on with there. And so to hear this and after Scalebound, it just really seems like Microsoft, or at least the Xbox division, under Phil Spencer, cannot get an original IP out. They cannot get a game out that will make people excited. Like, they will have something cool, and they just can't get it going. When they finally announced Banjo-Kazooie was coming back, it's like, oh, finally, it was nuts and bolts. People were like, ah, oh, that's kind of weak. And then years later, we finally get, oh, yeah, Perfect Dark is coming back. We got a new IP, Scalebound. Scalebound didn't release. We're buying out these big studios that you really love, and we're going to start funding some of their stuff. Bethesda's coming out with new IP. Well, Bethesda, the development as a whole, I was coming out with new IPs like Deathloop, and Microsoft. But those deals went to Sony's platform for a year, including. What's the game just released by Tango?
Ghostwire Tokyo.
Ghostwire Tokyo, yes. That one also went to PlayStation for a year. So this was Microsoft showing that, hey, we can have Bethesda make our exclusives. We can release these games. And so far, Xbox hasn't been doing a very good job.
But yeah, going back to Starfield, man, like this is exactly what I was talking about. Like, you have all these games in development. Starfield is going to be one of the first big new games for Xbox.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Everybody goes, where's Xbox's games? They're in development. They're being made. It's not like they're imaginary. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like they don't exist. It's just for Starfield, when this game comes out, you can't miss with it. A first impression is a big deal.
Yeah, and well, our first impression of the game has been concept art and concept art, and the only thing we got that was in-game footage was a robot. So I get why everybody's kind of concerned, because like I was alluding to earlier, like I was saying earlier, Xbox has such a hard time releasing a game, and now they're showing that they have a hard time releasing a game on time. Even Halo missed its release date by a whole year. So it just says something about Xbox game studios and game publishing as a whole. And so you say that, like, there's nothing wrong with delaying a game. That's fine. That's cool. Because, like you said, we don't want another 2042. And I think one of the some people at Bethesda Game Studio.
You said that. You said 2042, and I was like, it's Cyberpunk 20. Oh no, you're talking about Battlefield.
No.
I was like, the other disastrous one.
Yeah, the other one. Yeah, and some developers at Bethesda Game Studio was afraid that they were going to become another Cyberpunk 2077, and that's a weird fear to have, man. To where you're with this prestigious studio, and you're scared that you're going to release a buggy game, and that's saying something. Because Bethesda is known for their bugs. Like, their bugs is kind of like the charm of their games for some people. So that's really telling where they were in development. And
I don't see it as a sign of a publisher or the developer itself. It's just a sign, I think, of how we are with games in 2022 and the expectations we all have. I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily either. I'm just saying that's what it feels like to me. To whereas you have a game like Cyberpunk that looks fantastic, that gameplay wise people kind of love, kind of hate depending on who you are, but everyone pretty much was saying this game's a buggy mess, and that really turned some people off to the game. So that's right, I think what people are looking at something like that and going, we gotta avoid that. We can't have the buzz around our game to be about the bugs and the how terrible it is and all that stuff. You have to avoid that. So when you talk about Bethesda, again, this is their first big IP in years with Xbox. This is their crowning achievement of what they've been trying to do for years and years, buying these studios and making all these games. This is going to be one of their biggest games. You gotta hit. Small tangent going back to Halo, and it's hilarious you mentioned that Halo missed its release window by a year, and then it also released like a month early than expected. Like, the release for that game is fucking wild. But besides the point.
They released that, I don't think they called it open beta.
It was like a zero. Yeah, it was a beta.
Yeah, they're still trying with Halo. But I agree with you. This is definitely for both Xbox Studio and Bethesda. This is pretty much their magnum opus right now. It's not make or break for them, but it's gonna feel like a make or break, because if this game does not meet hype, it does not meet expectations,
it puts the pressure on that next big one for real.
It does, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on Phil.
At the end of the day, like I said, delays are good. I would much rather, it's the saying goes, I forgot the game developer who said it, you'd rather have a game get delayed and have a great product than a rushed product that comes out on time. So I agree with the delay. I think it's a good call. Make sure you avoid any potential disasters in terms of a launch. I think this game is a big deal for both the developer and the publisher. Even though I think it's a huge deal, I don't think it's like, oh my god, if this game fails, it's over for Xbox. It's just going to be a terrible time in the news for Xbox for quite a little bit of time. Xbox is going to do just fine if Starfield sucks. I'm not saying it's going to go under or anything stupid that.
Look at CD Projekt Red. Like you said, from gamers nowadays.
Yeah, CD Projekt Red's going to be fine, too. Like, they're over here talking about Witcher 4. And people are over here like, oh my god, after Cyberpunk, how can we ever take them seriously as a game developer again? Yeah, we're announcing Witcher 4. Oh my god, can you believe the new Witcher game's coming out?
Yes, and it's being built from the ground up for Series SX, PS5, and of course the new and improved PC hardware. So I see where you're coming from.
So yeah, it's not like this game is terrible. It's the end all be all for Xbox. It's just it's not a good first impression for Bethesda's first IP in a long time, and for Xbox, who needs a great game out of the gate to prove like, hey, our strategy, everything we've been doing over the past few years, here's why we did it. That is just going to be a bad look if it sucks. And it'll be terrible for us because we want a great Bethesda game. There's a reason why we love Bethesda. It's because the Elder Scrolls franchise is fucking amazing. It's because the Fallout franchise is fucking amazing. I would love to add Starfield to that list. You have no idea. A space version of Elder Scrolls? Sign me up. One of my favorite franchises, Mass Effect. I'm all in for this kind of game.
Yeah, I think that's what got me happy about this game. It's like, oh, wow, Bethesda-style Mass Effect. Okay. Because Bethesda's great with lore. So they love their lore. So you're definitely going to have a lot of content. I'm still looking forward to it. And I don't know. I know one thing that you've been looking forward to, Taylor. And we talked about it way earlier. Silent Hill. And that is going to be our main topic. And we're not talking about the PT demo or Silent Hills, as it turned out to be after you finished the playable teaser. And we're not even talking about the whole abandoned secret Silent Hill, is it actually from Kojima, Twitter mess that has been going on for, like, what, the past year and a half? Like, how long has that been going on?
It went away months ago. I don't remember what happened, but it was denied. Denied, and people just forgot about it. So,
yeah, that playable timer or whatever they had that never happened because they kept delaying it due to technical issues. So yeah, there was that. But leaker Nate the Hate sent out this tweet to talk about what they heard about Silent Hill the franchise going forward. Bloober team is working on Silent Hill 2 remake. With WeWork puzzles, new endings, and a timed PlayStation console exclusive. They also said that multiple Silent Hill projects are in development, including a new mainline entry and a few side stories. Nothing is confirmed, and just sharing what I've heard. Notable gaming insider Jeff Grubb commented on Nate the Hate's tweet saying, oh, no, actually, we missed that.
I have pulled up Jeff Grubb's tweet, by the way. My bad on that. Copy-pasted Nate the Hate's tweet twice for some reason. But here's what Jeff Grubb said. He, quote, retweeted Nate the Hate's tweet. This is the stuff I've heard, and it comes from multiple different sources. Not all of my sources are primary, but everything is mostly lining up. To me, the biggest indicator is the stuff I've seen lines up with Konami doing a big reveal at E3 last year before it pulled out, end quote. So in regards to all these Silent Hill rumors, it lines up kind of just like Jeff Grubb said. We've heard reports of a composer talking about something going on. There's been talk of Konami outsourcing their games. Like there's talks of Metal Gear Remake for months and months. We'll see if that ever happens. There's been talk with Silent Hill getting stuff going on. So all this lines up with stuff we've talked about before on this podcast. And in regards to Silent Hill, I'm kind of excited by that. Because I think that PT that everybody talks about, that is literally just a demo, it did so much for this franchise. They had a terrible run of video games over the past 15, 20 years.
Ooh, boy.
One playable demo just flips the script completely, and everybody is so pumped to play a new Silent Hill, whether that be a Silent Hill 2 remake or an entirely new game. So, in my take, it lines up perfectly with a lot of the rumors that we've seen in the past, and seeing Jeff Grubb come out and not fully endorse it, but be like, yeah, this lines up with stuff he's heard, and it's like, well, Jeff Grubb, kind of like Tom Anderson, their names are attached, and it's it gives it a little more weight, at least to me.
Yeah, the whole Silent Hill is having a bunch of bad games. I think that's what's scaring the devs and the publisher from ever releasing a new one. But I also find it kind of weird because Resident Evil, after their revive, and people showing that, yeah, we still like horror, we want more horror stuff. You think Silent Hill would have like a collection come out or do what Resident Evil was doing, or what Capcom was doing Resident Evil, and kind of like revigorating what everybody loves about the series by doing from the ground up remakes. It took so long, and talking about Bloober Team is working on Silent Hill 2 remake. I don't understand what took so long for them to decide to do that. I don't know what scared them from doing that. Like, remakes were a big thing the last generation. The Xbox One and PS4, a bunch of games was getting remakes. And I think that's a good way to test out new development kits or new game engines. Because a lot of these games, they get rebuilt thanks to these remakes. Like Resident Evil 7 Village, I think that's what it was called. Was Village 7?
That was 8. 7 was, eight? Okay. Was called Biohazard.
Okay, Biohazard. All right. I'm sorry, because I know in Japan, Resident Evil is just called Biohazard. So so I skipped Biohazard. But yeah, with those new games, you can tell that they were using the stuff they learned from the remakes from the ground up. And I think that's a great way to practice. And so Bloober Team working on Silent Hill 2 remake doesn't really make much sense to me, because Bloober Team, their horror stuff is different from what Silent Hill is known for. But at the same time, I can tell that Bloober Team is inspired by Silent Hill, so I'm sure this is like a dream project for everybody on the team. But my thing is the whole side stories. Why? Like, what does that entail? Are they doing like a Telltale's kind of thing, to where like it's a spinoff, like they did with Borderlands, or like, I don't know. What do you think the side stories would be?
That's an interesting concept. If they went that route, I'm not sure. I think you can have some different creative ideas if you wanted to really flesh out Silent Hill as a franchise and have different developers working on it like that. I think that would be pretty cool to see. When it comes to what I want to see, I kind of would be down to see a continuation of what Silent Hills was going to be. Maybe not the same concept, but if you can capture the vibe of it. Which, who knows if they're going to end up doing that from the sounds of everything we're reading and stuff. There's multiple projects with Silent Hill 2. Getting a remake being included there. So that's what I'm excited to see. Whether or not we get it is up in there.
Yeah, I think their multiple projects are just wait and see what Silent Hill 2 remake does. Because like I said, with Capcom did with Resident Evil, they were pushing out all kinds of remakes, even on a 3DS.
I think that's a very good comparison too. Not only because Resident Evil and Silent Hill have been compared forever, it feels like.
Yeah.
But because they can really use the way Capcom rebuilt the Resident Evil name as a blueprint.
Yeah, and I hope that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I could really... Now, granted, it's Konami. I don't have much faith in Konami. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
For playing that Metal Gear game, I forgot what it was called.
Oh, Revengeance? Oh, no, no. No, not Revengeance. That was actually the cool one. With Raiden.
I'm talking about the one with the zombies.
With the zombies, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that
one. Is it Rising?
You know what? I'm going to have to look it up because, wow, I forgot that existed.
That was, for me, the last straw was Konami. Where I was like, I can't trust anything this company does. And this was also after they fired Kojima, and I just thought that was ridiculously stupid, in my opinion, but... Yeah, the smart play is to use the Resident Evil franchise and what they did and look at it and be like, all right, we need to try to emulate this so we could bring our franchise completely back. And then we can create multiple new awesome games and make money off of that. Whether or not they actually do that is up in there. Again, no faith in it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Konami makes some of the wildest decisions. So... the side stories, I'm not sure what that's going to be about, because it's not like they're going to release the game on handhelds. Like, are they? Is that going to be the side story? Handheld games? Like Silent Hill games made specifically for the Switch or something, so you can use the gimmicky motion controls rather than build it from the ground up with the motion controls in mind? Is it going to be more like a VR thing? Kind of like with Resident Evil 4? Like, do you think they do something like that?
Could be. Again, I think this is a thing where we don't have all the information about it. So it's hard to really speculate on it. So we're really just talking about like what would be cool to see in for Silent Hill.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we're putting more thoughts in this than Konami is.
Yeah. But a VR game would be pretty cool. I think something like you mentioned, a Telltale-esque game. And I think you can pull off horror in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be intriguing. So I think that would be really cool to do as well. Because one of the last things you want is just to be like, all right, we have like 3 or 4 developers working on a Silent Hill game. And they're all going to be doing pretty much the same fucking thing.
Hey, you know what?
That'd be a terrible decision.
You know what? I know what one of those multiple projects might be. A Dead by Daylight-esque free-to-play multiplayer game.
Ah, man. I could see them doing that, too.
Everybody's going to try to play Pyramid Head.
I could see them doing that. Didn't they have DLC for Dying Light?
I think they had Pyramid Head in there at one time.
Dead by Daylight. Damn.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me today?
Dead by Daylight. Yeah, I think they had Pyramid Head in there one time. So yeah, so, I can. So yeah,
man, I don't want to see that though. I feel like
Hey, don't put that on me. You know, I'm like I said, we're putting more thought into this than Konami is. So hey, but that game, that Metal Gear game you're thinking about, it was Metal Gear Survive. Came out.
God, that game was dog shit.
It was terrible. It came out in 2018, so it's not even that old.
It feels like it's 10 years old.
Yeah, it does not feel like something that was too recent, but yeah, 2018. Oh my goodness.
But to go all the way back to Silent Hill, put a bow on this whole discussion here. I think I'm pretty pumped to see what they do with this franchise, and it depends on the developers involved. Bloober Team is the rumored one for the Silent Hill 2 remake, I believe. There's a few in development, supposedly, so that's why I'm a little confused there. But I'm very excited to see if that's true, what that looks like. I'm very excited to see what the other games could be. I think you pitched that whole, I wonder if they made a Telltale kind of game. I'm really liking that idea the more and more I think about it. And the same goes for just trying to recapture that vibe of PT. Not do PT, because I don't think you can do that without Kojima and Del Toro. But if you can capture that vibe again and put something out that's its own thing, I think you got a fantastic game on your hands. So you have a lot of great avenues you can go down. It's just going to really depend on, is Konami going to fuck it up? Or are they just going to let the developers do their thing and profit?
I really hope they have a more hands-off on this one. Because we saw, like you said, with Metal Gear, when Konami started interfering with that one, ooh, it became such a mess. Like, oh boy. So yeah, hopefully they do keep their distance from it and let the developers do their thing, especially since they got Bloober Team. So that's pretty cool. At least they're taking steps to be like, hey, we're still gonna get Western developers and still use Japanese developers, but we're trying to make a more broader horror game for Silent Hill. So I'm okay with that, because Silent Hill is more psychological, so it makes sense to get Bloober Team, who likes to do things like that. So hopefully they let Bloober Team do their thing, like use their expertise in this. Or at least that's what I hope. But since we're talking about playing Silent Hills back in our heyday, back in early 2000s, hoo boy. Taylor, what did you play last weekend?
Well, I've been playing a little bit of Overwatch, getting back into that game. After hearing some divisive opinions about Overwatch 2, I'm not sure how to feel about that, but it's been enjoyable to get back into Overwatch and try to relearn some things, because I was a pretty good Reinhardt main, and now coming back in and I'm realizing, oh shit, people who play this game, they're pretty good now, because this is a 6-year-old game. All the casual people have left. So,
yeah.
The roll queue, I hate the roll queue.
Oh, man, the roll queue is in fact, it was weird. The roll queue is the reason why I stopped playing Overwatch.
It's a great idea, but it's terrible in execution, because nobody is queuing for, or nobody is selecting the support role. So,
which is weird because I love playing support. Like, I'm a support main.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll play support. And then it still takes forever because everybody doesn't want to do tank. So, like, that was the weird thing for my queue. It's like, people don't want to play tank for some reason.
See, I'll play tank and support most times. Like, I'm really good with Reinhardt, really good with Zenyatta, love playing as Mercy, love playing as Moira. And then whenever I get, and Baptiste, I actually have enjoyed playing as Baptiste as well. Then getting to the tanks, I just started playing as Winston. Because I've always, like, seen other players play so well with Winston, and I just don't get it. So then I started, like, researching on it, and I was like, oh, I've been playing as him all wrong. And ever since I started playing, like, all the guides and stuff, like, you're just supposed to be a distraction, just an annoyance. You're not going to get all the kills. I've been having so much fun with it. Because I can tell, like, it's a weird satisfaction I get. And it's going to sound really weird. But I love pissing off the other team. Like, because that's your teammates can just come in and clean up shop for you. Like, as long as I think you that's why
a lot of people pick Tracer.
Yeah.
It's like a similar thing with Tracer. Yeah. Yeah. Me, I've always been terrible with Winston. And I'm like, man, I got to get better with Winston. And I've never did. Like, I've had a couple of games where I would, like, clean house with Winston. I'm like, oh, he's actually pretty good. And then I end up getting, like, white. And I'm like, yeah, no, never mind. I'm just terrible with Winston. Now, me, with tanks, I'm a D.Va main. D.Va all the way. And if I'm not playing D.Va, then it's Zarya.
D.Va's pretty good. I have no issues with D.Va. It's just, I don't know. I like being part of, like, helping the team out actively. Whereas D.Va is just this big tank who can do a lot of damage and also be an annoyance. So having the Reinhardt, the Winston, that kind of stuff, it really helps me out more as a tank. Like even Orisa, that way I could throw out a shield, or Sigma for that matter.
Yeah, I like Orisa. I used to love playing as D.Va until like their update around a year or two ago turned her from like a tank into a squishy. And people started steamrolling D.Vas. I was like, oh no, this is trash. She was such a good character, and they changed her meta to the point to where she was barely a tank. And I just started playing as Zarya more. Because if I wanted to be unshielded, I'd just play as Zarya.
Yeah. Zarya is underrated. Like, if you she have is. A good Zarya on your team, like, you're going to be covered the entire game.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have that shield. But just been enjoying that game and then hearing stuff about Overwatch 2 and been like, oh man, I don't know how to feel about it because I'm really getting back into this franchise and I was getting pumped for Overwatch 2 and everybody going like the 5v5 isn't working. Everybody,
man, I hate that.
The tanks are more tanky and have more damage, which is weird. Like, I thought the 5v5 would be better, to be honest with you. I thought that was a good call because I felt like it was a little too chaotic in Overwatch 1. But then, after hearing what everybody's saying, it sounds like it's done the opposite. It's kind of fucked it up entirely, because the characters aren't created for that reason.
Yeah, and that was a weird thing. The 5v5 was to make things faster, but because when you have two tanks, you know, you got two out of six characters just eating up damage. But the problem is, most of the characters in Overwatch are DPS. So you needed that second tank. Like, that helped balance out their over-reliance on DPS characters. And busting it down to just one tank. Now you got, like, now you got four DPS characters steamrolling your tank. And I don't understand the idea behind that.
Yeah, I think they're going to need to make some changes.
Oh, no. They're definitely going to have to tweak everything about that game. Yeah. At least from what I've heard from people who played the beta.
But what have you been playing?
As for me, I have been playing a review copy of Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song. So for everybody who's confused about which Vampire the Masquerade I'm talking about, it's not the Battle Royale. It's not the in development Hell Vampire Masquerade 2, the actual sequel to the cult classic Vampire the Masquerade PC game. But I am talking about Masquerade Swan Song that's being made by Big Bad Wolf. This one is actually a far more narrative driven game. It's honestly a slow narrative driven game, both story and gameplay wise. I myself I would do a more in-depth review at a later date, only because I ran into a couple of bugs that stopped me from progressing through the game to where I had to get in contact with developers and let them know the bugs I ran into, and they helped me solve them. I don't know if Swan Song is getting a day one patch. So I will say that one of the bugs I ran into was game breaking because it was a puzzle that you needed to solve in order to advance the story. The devs told me that they are aware of the bug and that they will be fixing it. So do be prepared that there are a couple of game-breaking bugs that will make you restart entire sections. And I will get into that in a moment. But for Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song, you are taking control of three new characters into the Vampire the Masquerade mythos, I guess you could say. Well, because it's part of the Dark World, which is this entire lore-driven mythos that I cannot get into because I myself do not fully understand it. I'm a casual. I'm just now getting into Vampire the Masquerade. I'm just now getting into the world of darkness, which is what Masquerade and there was the Werewolf Apocalypse game. They're all set into that same universe. But you take control of three new characters. One named MM, another character named, I'm forgetting the character's name, because Leia is my favorite and I've been playing the daylights out of her. But geez, what is his name? Galeb. I'm sorry, I blanked out for a second, but you play as, Galeb, who is far more calm than the other characters and who seems more like he's in control. You play as MM, who has more of a lively personality. She's stuck in this world that she's not too sure she wants to be a part of. She's friends with the Prince of Boston, whose name is Hazel Iverson. They have history together, and Hazel is really pushing MM deeper into this world that she's a part of, but she doesn't want too much to be a part of the council and being pretty much the right hand of the prince. She just wants a quote unquote normal life within the vampire world, and she doesn't want to get too involved. But unfortunately, because of her ties with the prince, she's getting more and more involved beyond her will. And you also play as Laisha, who is my favorite character, who is having all kinds of mental issues because she is capable of seeing premonitions of the future. But the problem is she cannot put it all together at once. It comes in bits and pieces and the confusing. So for her, she's more the fortune teller for the prince. And Hazel uses her to try to keep herself in power by predicting the future and stopping enemies and even people who are supposed to be her allies from betraying her. And this has an effect on Laisha as there are points in the story where she doesn't know what's real. She doesn't know what's fake. And the player themselves, you think you know what's real. But as things for Laisha starts to take a turn, you get a choice of whether she gives in to these powers or she can resist to it. And it changes her story to where you yourself do not know if what she's seeing is real because everything is questionable. And with Galeb, when you play as Galeb, it feels like you're a yes man when it comes to Galeb, but only because he understands the vampire world that he's in. So he's more in control. So while you're playing him, you get this feeling that you should be a little more intimidating and that you should be in control. And when you're not in control, it feels like you're out of character. But the game does such a good job story-wise of pushing the player's choice to feel organic and natural into the flow of the story with these three characters, that even when you do something that kind of feels out of character for Galeb, in turn, it's still in character for Galeb. And I think that's the strongest point for Vampire Masquerade Swan Song. The story carries the game. The story so far is rich in lore. For someone like me who's a casual who do not understand everything that's going on, the game does a great job of keeping you in the current story for Swan Song, but also filling players in with the lore of the Dark World. And what I mean by that is, points in conversations, you will hear characters bring up certain sections like Thin Bloods or Childs or Veils and medicine known as Trejax. The game has a very clean encyclopedia that you can stop the game at any time during a conversation and immediately go to that section and immediately go to that lore, and you can read about it and easily understand what these characters are talking about, and then pop right back into the game and pick up right where you were without it feeling like you're missing something. So story-wise, the game does a great job of filling people like myself in on who these characters are and what are clans and what a child is. And it's unfortunate that the gameplay itself does not carry that same sense of belonging, if that makes any sense. Because when you play the game, okay, we talked earlier about Telltale style games. This kind of feels like that. You move around freely, but you have this pseudo point and click kind of way to where you're finding puzzle pieces, like a card key that's hidden somewhere to open a secret area, or you're talking to other characters and you get this dialogue tree to where you have to pay attention to the dialogue. If you're the kind of person who wants to skip dialogue in games, Swan Song is not for you. I'm telling you right now, you're not going to enjoy this game. It is narrative heavy. It is narrative driven. So if you like to skip those things, you're SOL. Because the game puts a huge focus on dialogue. Your battles are done in dialogue. Your stealth, while they do stealth in real time, a lot of stuff that regards to getting to secret areas or finding secret items, it all comes down to dialogue. And the dialogue tree is one of the best that I've seen, but also one of the blandest. And that's because of the RPG element that they try to throw in there. You have multiple choices for your characters. They have stuff like for like their detective skill, they have education, they have intimidation, they have persuasion, they have stuff that you would use that bumps up your percentage in dialogues, because there are characters that have powers that that you have to do a roll dice. They try to make it like a tabletop, to where there are roll dices and percentages with dialogue, to where even if you do have a certain skill tree, you can still fail at this dialogue because your opponent has a higher percentage for you. Against you, and you can fail dialogues but still move on in the story. And everything in your dialogue affects your character and affects the story, to where you can get locked out of secret areas that could have opened more about certain lore. So the story is good and the writing is strong. Unfortunately, the gameplay does not hold on for very long, because the Telltale part is fine, but it's the puzzles. The puzzles stop the game dead in its tracks. There's a moment to where the enemy of the game is closing in on you, and it's this tense moment, and you want to escape, so you start doing stealth and you start doing these tricks to get past enemies, and then it comes to a screeching halt because you have to solve this puzzle. And like I said earlier, one of the puzzles was bugged out, so I had to restart an entire section from the very beginning. I'm still playing through Swan Song. I do recommend it if you enjoy narrative games, but if you want to skip through the narrative, Swan Song is not going to be for you. So Taylor, are you interested in the Masquerade Swan Song?
It's a franchise that I've always had interest in. I've never played. From what you what you're describing here, it sounds like I don't know if I'd play it, to be honest with you, because of what you said about the gameplay. I think that'd be the thing that holds it back a little bit to me. That said, if I ever got into the franchise, it sounds like something story-wise I would actually be very interested in.
Yeah, this is
because I'm always down for compelling stories, like whatever genre, like even horror, like I've talked about before. I'm a wimp. That being said, some horror stories are really interesting. So I'll find myself looking at a YouTube video about it instead of watching the movie. So I find the story pretty interesting from what you described, but not necessarily the gameplay.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's definitely narrative driven, and unfortunately, it's the gameplay that kind of holds the game back. Oddly enough, if it was just more, if it was the dialogue tree, if that was the main focus, this game would be absolutely magnificent. But unfortunately, it's because they try to throw in those puzzles, and they try to add in a couple of extra things that doesn't really work. It holds the game back to the point to where, honestly, on this podcast, I've done a great job of convincing you and Riley, like, of games that's narrative-wise is great. And I have no problem telling everybody to go out and buy a game. With Swan Song, I say wait and watch streamers play it. I know, since it's narrative-driven, I know you don't want spoilers. But take a look at the gameplay that's not the dialogue. Beyond the dialogue, the puzzles and the movement of the game. Because like you said, you're not sure yourself from the sound of it. I say wait and watch those gameplay. This is one of those games that you watch a streamer play to see if it's something that you will enjoy. But wrapping things up, Taylor, real fast, what are you working on? Where can we find you?
You can occasionally find me here on this podcast. You can also find me on Nerds Talk Movies. Other than that, I'm just working on this podcast. I'm working on our other podcast we got going on. I'm also working on another possible project. Who knows? Stuff we got brewing. I did just have a guest appearance over on the Super Bracket Bros podcast, where we debated who would win a fight between Alcatraz from Crysis versus John Price from the Modern Warfare series. It was a lot of fun. The guys over at Super Bracket Bros are fantastic. Go give them a listen. But I don't really have any socials. We are working on socials here for this podcast, so you can find me in our Discord, I guess. Link in the description.
All right, and as for me, I am going to be doing a more in-depth review for Vampire the Masquerade, and I will continue to play Swan Song throughout the weekend. And you can find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. And if you find a weirdo in a Fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place. You can also find us on Discord, which is the best way to get in touch with us, at least for now. And please consider dropping us a rating. It helps out tremendously, and we truly appreciate it. Check out the latest episodes of Nerds Talk Movies, where Taylor, Drew Garrison, and the Nerd Stash's very own John McDonald share their spoiler-filled opinions on Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Also, check out thenerdstash.com, where you can find all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and more. We have a ton of reviews, guides, lists, and opinion pieces that you might find interesting. So be sure to check us out over there if you got the time. And finally, we've talked about this several times before, but next week is Clash Week here at TNS Network. We have our very first episode of Clash of the Stash premiering on Friday, May 27th. It'll be live at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Speaking of Clash Week, during Clash Week, there won't be any new episodes of this podcast or Nerds Talk Movies. We're spending that time working on Clash of the Stash and getting the ball rolling on next month's edition. What you can expect for next week's Clash is it will feature Taylor facing off against David from Greek. Actually, no, how do you say his last? Is it Dassau?
David Dassau.
David Dassau, okay. So I was afraid I was going to mispronounce that. But Taylor will be going up against David from the Geek Garage podcast with our very own Tristan Benz acting as the honorable judge. And their topic will be introduce one of the following into the MCU: Deadpool, the X-Men, or the Fantastic Four? Actually, looking forward to that. I would like to see. I'd like to hear your opinion on that, especially after what we saw with Multiverse of Madness.
Michael, I'm gonna ahead and tease what I got going on. I'm gonna be going Deadpool, and when I say my pitch is out there, like I think I might lose based on how out there my pitch is for Deadpool. It's gonna.
But
be
you're sticking to those guns.
I'm gonna stick to my guns, though. You know. You gotta go bold if you want to win at Clash of the Stash, and that's what I'm gonna do next week.
Oh, a little bit of teaser there. Oh, I'm really looking forward to that because I like to see your opinions on Deadpool in the MCU. All right. So with that said, Taylor, thank you for taking the time to come on here and humor me with our news, and thanks to everyone for listening in. We truly appreciate you taking the time. Even if it's just background noise. And again, we are off next week due to the hoopla that is Clash Week. But we will be back on Friday, June 3rd, to talk about some gaming news. So we will see you then.